Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances, where we talk making money, saving money, and getting out of debt, all while having some fun along the way. And on today's show, we're getting into the career side of things with some tips to help you find the right role so you don't find yourself so desperate to be out that you leave money on the table.
Yes, sir. And this week in public service announcements, our first course, Debt-Free, that is an acronym, a four-week starter kit is in development or production or something fancy, one of those two
one
terms.
One of those.
Yes. Thank you to the feedback I received from our closed Facebook community. I hope to have it available to the people this financial literacy month, April 2019. As always, our Facebook group and email subscribers will be the first ones to know.
Yes, and also the Patreon peeps. So if you haven't checked us out on Patreon, paybal.co/Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Also a good place to get exclusives and support the show since we've been doing this for free, brother. We've been doing this for free for a hot minute, over 3 years, which reminded me that a couple of weeks ago, we actually surpassed 3 years of Paychecks and Balances, which is pretty crazy.
That's what's up, man. That's what's up. No more free Randy.
And today we're joined by Scott Barlow, the founder and CEO of Happen to Your Career, where he and his team help regular people who have a desire to transition to a new career that they'll find more fulfilling. So here's our chat with Scott, and we hope you enjoy. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Hey, thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, it's definitely great to have you on. So for those that are unfamiliar with your background, can you tell the good folks of PNB Nation a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm laughing because I was one of those people that took a very, very long time to figure out what the heck I wanted to do all through, all through college and university and everything along those lines. And much later, and I'm sure we'll go into a part of it here, much later, now at this point, that necessity to figure out for myself has turned into how, well, us creating a business and how we help other people to this very day at Happen to Your Career, which is where we help people identify what they want to be doing, what matches with their strengths and their gifts, and identifying what creates an amazing career for them. And that's a good chunk of what me and my team get to do every day. But there was a whole lot in between getting there. But at this point, that is what I do. I'm a podcaster. I am a CEO. I am a business owner. I get to run the business with my wife, and we've got a team of about 10 people. And
wow,
it's been a wild last 6 years or so as we've embarked on that journey. Oh, and then on top of it, we have this hobby of pulling our kids out of school and traveling once a year. We usually pull them out for 4 to 6 weeks and then move to another country. And that's turned into its own little side business. So we do a lot of things. I do a lot of things. And it's hard to put under one title.
So pulling the kids out of school, how does that work?
well, we don't just yank him out of school necessarily and move along our merry way. What we do is the teachers don't like that. However, they do really enjoy when we go and we talk to them at the beginning of the year, or even, even before the beginning of the year. And we've got a great relationship with all of our kids as teachers. We've got three little kids ranging, 7 through 11. And we ask them, hey, we're going to do this. What's the very best way that we can keep pace with class? And most of them, up through now, it may change as they get into junior high or high school or something like that. But most of them are like, oh, you don't need to do anything. Just have them keep a journal, and they're going to learn way more over there in Paris or in the UK or wherever it happens to be. And just come back, and we'll have them do a presentation to the class. That's what's happened the majority of the time. But it's taken that proactivity, I think, because I've encountered others that haven't had the same results when they're like, hey, so next week we're gonna pull our kids out of school.
Yeah, I can imagine that creating some interesting conversations, for lack of a better word. And so you mentioned that it took you a while to figure out what it was that you ultimately wanted to do. So when you were in high school, college, what did you think you were going to do when you got out? Or how did that evolve over time? Because, even when I was a child, it's funny, I thought I was going to be a garbage man. Like, I mean, what child really aspires to be a garbage man? But I had this obsession with garbage trucks. I don't know why. I think every kid has their own thing. And then as I got older, I started thinking more about HR and there was a period of time where I even thought I was going to be a software engineer. And then I realized because math, this ain't for me. So what did you think that you wanted to be when you were growing up?
First of all, I just got to say that you are not the first person, this may come as a surprise, that I've heard say, I want to be a garbage man when I grow up. Only because we've got a team member in Austin, the same one we were talking about before we hit record, that his family owned a garbage company. So you are person number two, as crazy that sounds, that thought that when they were a kid. But for me, I wanted to be an architect when I was growing up, because I enjoyed drawing and everything else. And I quickly realized that wasn't actually what I wanted to do as I got into high school. And at that point, I was starting to have the thoughts of like, okay, well, I like to play music. You know, I play bass and guitar and blah, blah, blah. But I don't really want to travel all that much. Like all that touring, that doesn't sound that great. So what else could I do? Well, I could be in studio recording. Then people have to come to my studio. And I started looking at all these different things. So when I entered college, I really had no idea what I wanted to be doing. And I ended up changing majors probably 7 or 8 or 9 times someplace in there.
Wow.
A lot of times. Yeah, I was that person.
How long did it take you to graduate? Were you still able to do it in 4 years?
5 years. I was on the 5-year plan. Yes.
Okay, got it.
Very much, very much. But I also, at the same time, as I was going through, I kind of progressed from, hey, I want to do something in computers. Okay, well, I don't want to code in a closet. So that's not my gig. So what else could I do? Well, network information systems. And I made this progression more towards business. And as I got into business, I started realizing, hey, there's some things I can sink my teeth into here that just really resonated with me. And, you know, eventually I found HR and marketing and really enjoyed those aspects. But also at the same time, I had to have, to be able to formally enter the business program, I had to have an internship. And for me, I didn't really want at the time this, I don't know, I guess you could say like coffee and donuts type of internship where it's experience on paper or something. Like, I wanted to actually do something that was meaty and enjoyable and was going to give me experience. So, for me, it was this case of be careful what you wish for, because I ended up coming home with a small business. And that was the real reason that I ended up graduating in 5 years, because I was having a lot of fun, you know, building this business over the last 3 years of university, and then realized that you know, I could take this stuff that I was learning in class and apply it next day into this business. So it was definitely a progression and a jump in, realize this wasn't working for me, jump into something else, realize that this wasn't working for me. And many, many years later, this has influenced how we help other people find what they want to be doing too, so they don't have to experience the same level of pain and switching again and again and again and again.
And so what was that business during college?
You know, it was a painting business, actually.
Huh. That's not what I expected you to say.
No, not at all. And it was a great ground to learn, because honestly, to run a painting business, which is kind of the bane of the contracting industry, it's not that high barrier to entry. You pretty much can have a paintbrush and go start doing that. So eventually, at the height of it, I had a crew of 25 people, multiple job sites, and it was making something like $40,000 a year, which was, to my 21-year-old self, that might as well have been a million. That seemed like a really, really high amount of money at the time. And then the funny thing was, though, I knew that I didn't want to be in painting. I still didn't know actually what I wanted to be doing. So for me, I didn't actually realize that owning a business was a viable, or could be a viable opportunity in the real world. I just never had any good role models with that. So I sold my business at the end of it, and I ended up accepting this job that had made me a job offer, and all my friends and family had told me that, hey, this is an amazing, amazing job offer. And you know, I had a lot of responsibility. I had 20 people under me, and I moved my brand new bride at the time down to Portland, Oregon, also on the west side. Mm. And we went down there, and I ended up taking this job that was right in front of me, is available to me. And honestly, I was really not that excited about it, but I did it. And unfortunately, it started getting very, very downhill from there. And I ended up gaining about 50 pounds as I was on my I think I was spending probably like 3 hours in the car or so, give or take, which for, I know you're in California and everything like that. That's not a massive amount as far as California, but for Portland, Oregon, it felt pretty high. And I started, having anxiety attacks on the way into work. Not every morning, but enough mornings. And I didn't even realize what was going on. I just knew that it felt pretty terrible. And so I spent about a year in that job feeling pretty horrible. And it was a pretty large mismatch of both values and strengths and everything else. But I decided finally, okay, I've got to do something. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to go talk to my boss, right? So I call my boss up and he's in another state at that point. So I call him up and say, hey, you know what? I am not sure this job is the greatest fit. I think maybe I made a mistake. And it felt actually really relieving to have that conversation. But apparently he felt the same way as I did, because 3 weeks later he fired me.
Oh.
Yeah, I didn't see it coming either.
How old were you at that time when you had that conversation?
Oh man, how old was I? I was probably 20, 23, 22. I don't even remember. I guess I would have been 1 year out of my 5 year college plan.
And the reason I ask is, do you think it was you, the job, or youthful indiscretions? Why was that mismatch there?
It was all three, to be quite honest. It was a really terrible fit values-wise. Like, I was being asked to do things that I just couldn't really identify that were a mismatch. Like, I just feel wrong about this. And, so I was getting asked to do things like that on a regular basis that just didn't jive with my personal standards. And then on top of that, I learned a ton from that job. That was a really great experience as far as that goes, even though it felt horrific when I was there. But also, it was a mismatch of skill sets too. Like, some of the things that I was being asked to do, I didn't have the skills, and I didn't want to have the skills at that time in those areas either. So I was really pretty horrible at it. I was horrible at the job. And then it was creating a horrific experience for me in all those other areas too. So it was just like worst mismatch ever. And I mentioned I gained 50 pounds. Part of the reason for that was I would find myself at the restaurant next door trying to order, like three extra large hamburgers and like huckleberry milkshake and a bunch of fries, and trying to give myself an excuse to be sick to actually go home from the 70 to 90 hour weeks that I was working at the time, which also didn't help my feeling about the role. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty brutal. So how did that experience change the way that you approached work or jobs going forward?
Well, that's such a great question, because I mean, that could not influence everything else going forward for me after having such a horrific experience. So after I got fired, I remember actually being in the car on the way home, and I had to like pick up my phone. It was a much larger phone than I have now at the time. It was probably like a cell phone brick or something along those lines, and call my wife, my bride of 1 year at the time, and tell her that I had moved her down to Portland, Oregon, away from her family, pretty much only for this job, and now I no longer had this job. So there was a whole bunch of shame and embarrassment and all kinds of other stuff that I can't even begin to describe that went along with that. But after I got off the phone, I remember just thinking to myself, I still had a good hour left in the car to just be able to get home in the rain and the commute. And I remember thinking to myself, I never, ever, ever, ever want to do this again. Like, I've got to figure out a way to never put myself in this position again. So I ended up making that commitment to myself that, look, I'm not going to settle on taking another job. I've got to find something that is a much better fit and really lines up with what I actually want. And the only problem for me at the time was I didn't necessarily know what I wanted. I mean, that's how I ended up in that role in the first place. I took it because it was there. It was right in front of me. It was available. And I mean, everybody's done something like that in life, like gotten into a relationship or taken a job or taken a promotion because it's there. And what else would you do if you didn't take it? So, but I decided in that moment driving home in the rain that, look, this can't happen again, ever. So that single decision was what ended up setting on a track, and I would call it even a quest for the next 10 years to figure out how all this stuff works in terms of careers and career happiness and general happiness and psychology and everything that goes along with this.
And so you talked about starting this business in college, which that experience probably isn't the average college student experience where you're actually applying what you learned in the classroom to to your own business. I know that wasn't mine.
Sure.
And so there's a certain level of confidence that's required to be able to do that and then also be able to continuously pivot. And then also the conversation that you had with your boss saying you didn't think it was a good fit. I know a lot of 21, 22, even for 30 somethings or 40 somethings, that could be a really difficult conversation to have with someone. So how did you develop that confidence, or what gave you that confidence, both in terms of having your own business, but then also being able to have that direct conversation with your boss when you're so early in your career?
You know, there was, I guess I would love to say that it was, you know, I took all of these really proactive methods and everything else. And honestly, the most proactive thing that I did was engaging in a situation that was going to be really, really challenging for me in starting that business and working through that business, because that put me in situations where, like, I remember, this is so, so embarrassing at the time. Less embarrassing now, but still a bit embarrassing. So I ended up coming to this job site where my crew of six people had basically destroyed this guy's siding. And coincidentally, he had just come back from a biking accident where he had knocked his two front teeth out. So I think I was maybe 20. I think this was my first year that I was doing it. So I was probably 20, 21, something along those lines. And I remember the guy just like laying into me and yelling at me and just going to town. And I didn't know what to do. Like, I legitimately did not know what to do. And he's standing there in his bike shorts, no teeth, like spitting as he's laying into me. And I didn't know what else to do. So I was pretty much in tears, like a grown college student type tears. And I didn't know what to say to him. So I'm like, you must not go to church very often. And like, it was, and although that wasn't particularly effective, and that turned out to be a totally botched job and everything, but having those situations again and again and again, where I was put into those situations to be able to figure out what to do and how to handle it. And those things that on the surface seem pretty terrible, but honestly gave me the gift of being able to understand and work through very, very challenging situations and to realize that almost everything can be worked out in some capacity. And at the end of that particular job, even though we totally botched his house and, you know, I take full ownership over not knowing what we're doing on that job and not knowing how to handle it at the time, but it still came out okay. We still ended up, you know, he paid us a very small amount and I covered the rest of it, and it still turned out okay. And I got the opportunity to be able to learn from that and many hundreds of other situations exactly like that one. So by the time I got to that really horrific job, you know, several years later, then I didn't know what to do. And honestly, I would not have the same exact conversation in the same way today. And we've coached many people. We have a team of career coaches, and we've coached many, many people through those types of situations. However, I at least at that point in time had some confidence that if I did something, that was going to be better than continuing to tolerate it. And I knew that I had to do at least that. even if it didn't go perfectly. And clearly it didn't go perfectly because I got canned and that was not the outcome I was looking for. But honestly, it was the best gift that ever could have happened. I could still be at that job. I have a friend who still is at that company actually to this day. And he's now the president of the company, as crazy as that sounds. And he's turned it into a totally different organization and it's got much different values and everything like that. But I could have kept being there and just tolerating that. And I think without those situations beforehand, I probably would have.
Yeah. And it's funny how that works out because looking back, one of the best things that ever happened to me was not getting this consulting job out of school. It was one of those Deloitte interviews. It sounded super sexy. You know, that's living the life, being on the road. And I realize now how miserable I would have been if I got that job. Just one, for my personality type, two, traveling all that time and not really having much time to recharge because it's so focused on, you know, the client and schmoozing and everything else. So it's interesting how for so many different people, it works out that not getting an opportunity or having a negative career experience ultimately ends up to be the best thing that happens to them.
Yeah. And that's such a great example that you're talking about for yourself too. So in that situation, when you didn't get that, what did that pave the way for that turned out to be better? Because I'm guessing that probably created the space in one way or another by not having that opportunity to do something better or continue something better. So what was that for you?
It ended up for me being a role in a management training program for a business-to-business services company. So it was one of those rotational programs where you spend some time in services, you're out meeting clients. So I was actually the person like restocking first aid kits, wearing the company uniform and these steel-toe boots and driving a van sometimes by the river. And I did that for 1 year. Then I spent some time in sales and that ended up giving me the transferable skills to make the leap into staffing as a headhunter, which then set me on the path to be able to get a role as an HR generalist. Realized I didn't like that so much, which then put me back on the path into recruiting, which is where I am today, where now I'm a staffing manager for a Silicon Valley company. And I don't know if I'm on the same path if I didn't end up getting that first job out of school that gave me some of those transferable skills that I am really using today.
That's awesome. That is such a great example. I think that's super cool because that is, I mean, it takes any time that you are having something happen that's a negative and then turning that into something better, or you're saying no to something that is not right and making the space for something else better or greater to happen, like that takes some measure of courage. So nicely done, sir. And two, I just recently did a keynote for a company and the main topic was how to not settle in a variety of different areas, work and et cetera, et cetera. And one of the things that we've realized is we've worked with lots of people that have an interest in not tolerating their situation or not settling in their life or their work is that it takes some measure of courage. And the only way for more good things to come in is to be able to say no to those things that are less good. Mm-hmm. That sounds like really simple logic, but so few people apply it.
Hey folks, we're taking a quick break from our chat with Scott to tell you about today's sponsor, the University of California Irvine's continuing education programs. UCI has over 60 convenient certificates and specialized study programs that can help you take your career or business to the next level in as little as 6 months. It's a top 10 public university and the expert instructors have real-world experience, which means none of that only in theory stuff that turns out to not be so useful when you take that knowledge to the professional streets. Yeah, I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about. You'll also be able to interact with your peers, which means the opportunity to bounce ideas and insights off each other so that you get the most out of this immersive learning experience. UCI's spring quarter registration is open for a little while longer. Visit ce.uci.edu/podcast and enter promo code podcast for 15% off one course. Again, visit ce.uci.edu/podcast and enter promo code podcast for 15% off one course. And now back to our conversation with Scott.
I'm going to ask a question here. I do this at work sometimes. So I'm going to ask the question because it's going to put you on the spot. And then I'm going to keep talking a little bit so you can have some time to formulate the question. So I tell people, hey, I'm about to put you on your spot so you can get the, you know, get the gears rolling. So the question is going to be, you said 10 years, and I was going to wonder if you can distill that down to 3 to 5 like top lessons or takeaways that you had from all these experiences, either yourself or from all the coaching in the aggregate, if you will. That's the question. But my comment is going to be, so you can start thinking about that, is the reason I ask that is because when I hear 10 years, it's funny how my scale has changed. Like, so I'm 36. Yeah. When I hear 10 years, I'm like, man, that's right around the corner. I'm thinking about retirement. I'm like 40 years, you know. And if someone told me 10 years at 20, I'd be like, man, that's forever away. Like, I ain't got to worry about 10 years. What is that? You know, like, what, car's going to be flying or something like that. So I know some listeners are going to hear 10 years. And they're like, oh, okay, yeah, that's nothing. That's a blip on the radar. And others are like, that's forever. So is there anything for either both of those listeners that you could have as a takeaway for what you've learned in that 10-year period, and then they could see where they could apply it on their scale?
Yeah, absolutely. And as you're asking that, are you thinking in terms of work and careers, or are you thinking in terms of other areas? Because that changes my answer. I've screwed up a lot of stuff over the last 20-ish years or so, learned a lot of things.
I'll start with work and career, and what I guess I'm trying to get at is I wonder, and I've wondered this for a while, is the career pathway kind of is what it is, that the time has to pass. Like you said, that friend is now the president of the company. Is there no quicker path to president than the company other than time?
That's a great question. I've never been asked that question. I actually speak on this subject all the time. We even have some training classes that we do on this particular subject, but nobody ever asked that question. So one, kudos to you, because the fact that you're asking that question indicates that you're probably way further along on that track versus like most of the rest of the world. But here's why I say that that's such a great question. What we found we've been really fortunate because we've been able to work directly with thousands of people on our team. So we get a lot of data to be able to see how this stuff actually works. But also, since we run a podcast, the Happen to Your Career podcast, we've been really fortunate to connect with a lot of researchers too. So we get kind of the culmination of all kinds of different research and data and practice and everything like that. And what we found is that especially now, even compared to like 50 years ago or so, it is less about time and more about actions that you take. So you know how you've probably heard it. People say like, oh, just give it time. I respectfully disagree. Instead, we measure things over action that happened to your career. So if your goal is to become the president of whatever organization, or if your goal is to be able to, my wife and I just had a conversation. I'm also similar age. I'm 37. I just turned 37. We had a conversation with our financial advisor for how we can set ourselves up so that we do not, we want to keep working, but so we don't have to, and we're not forced to work by the time we're 40, going from 40 to 41. So if that's your goal or whatever else are your goal, what are the actions that you can take? Because that's going to give you the shortest route. When you focus on time, that's not something that you can do anything about. So it moves actually the what's called the locus of control and how you're thinking about solving that particular problem or challenge or goal into something that you can actually do something about. And even if you don't have direct control over it, there's certainly many things that you can do or actions that you can take to influence it. And by asking that question, what specifically can I do, or how can I build the path? After you understand what that destination is, that gives you the ability to actually solve that problem. Now, here's the thing that I have discovered though, is most people in the world don't know what they want. So even if you know that it's spread over action, then you can't really do anything with that, because you have to know that, hey, I want to be able to retire by the time I'm 40. And that's one of the most important things to me. And I'm going to say no to other things in order to be able to retire by the time I'm 40, or whatever it might be. Or I want to be the president of the company, or I want to make a move into HR or recruiting or whatever those things are. So that in itself becomes one of the biggest challenges. And I mean, when you ask somebody, try it next time you get an opportunity, ask them what they want. Most people can't answer it because it's such a huge question. So in terms of, and this goes back to answering your other question directly, what are some of the biggest things that I have learned over the last few years? One, it's a whole lot easier to get where you want to go when you understand what the destination is, because, well, I don't know, think about a road trip. If you don't know you're going to Tallahassee, Florida, it's going to be really difficult to get to Tallahassee, Florida. You might end up in Montana, and right now it's really cold in Montana.
Yeah, luckily.
So,
luckily, I would never go to Tallahassee, Florida. So that,
if I'm
in Tallahassee, Florida, I'm definitely lost.
Exactly. So then I think the question becomes, like, how do you get the answer to that question for whatever area of your life that that you want? And one of the best ways that we've found to help do that is what we call the puzzle method. So I'll share a quick story for you that illustrates that method. So rather than sitting down and going, hey, what kind of career do I want to move into? Or, hey, what do I want in my life? Or, hey, you know, whatever else, which are just really big, complex questions, we want to break it down into much smaller things. So this came out of a number of years ago when my youngest son was 2 years old. He was first putting together puzzles, and he's doing what every two-year-old does. Like, he's grabbing one piece and he's grabbing another piece and he's like mashing them together and making a little sound. He's like, and it's not working. And he's starting to get really frustrated. And instead, I went over, you know, first I watched him for a while to see what he's going to do. But then I went over and sat down next to him and said, okay, Grayson, you know, try it this way. And then I showed him what everybody, you know, pretty much knows for putting together puzzles. If you start with the corner pieces, then you can pull those out. There's not too many of them, and that are easily identifiable. And then you can go to the edge pieces because, again, same thing. They all have an edge. You can pull them out. And once you have the edge pieces, you can begin putting them together because you can start to see the colors and the shapes. And then once you have the edge pieces and the corner pieces assembled, you now have a frame. And the crazy thing about when you have that frame is now you can start to, even if you've lost the box of all your puzzles, like may or may not have happened at my house, and you can't see the picture, you can still begin assembling together the rest of that puzzle one piece at a time. And what we found is that many people are trying to put their lives and their careers together the same way that Grayson was originally. Like, they're taking one piece and they're like, I need a better boss, or, you know, I need more flexibility. And they're like trying to mash them together, and it's not working, and they're still getting really frustrated. They might know that they need more flexibility. They might know that they want a better boss, but that really doesn't answer all of the remaining questions and break it down in a way that's actually useful. So instead, the way that we've found that incorporates a lot of what people need from career psychology research and positive psychology research and a lot of other things that I get really nerdy about, but aren't really that useful or interesting to talk about on here. So the way that we've found to adapt it is those corner pieces are what we call your signature strengths. Now, you can think about your signature strengths as those areas that are intersecting, that not just that you're good at, because you can be good at something. Like, you can be good at pivot tables and be like, I'm so good at pivot tables, but I hate pivot tables, because that's no good. So those areas that are you're great at, or have the potential to be great at, those areas that you have the ability to deliver a lot of value at, and combined together with those areas that you enjoy. So think about it almost as a Venn diagram intersecting. Those areas that fall into all three of those categories typically are what we call your signature strengths. And that's where you start out with, because we found that even people who spend as little as 1 to 2 more hours a day working and utilizing their signature strengths feel happier on an ongoing basis. They are more productive. There's a ton of really great research out there to validate that from a lot of different places. Primarily, Gallup is a good one that has done some amazing research out there. So we start with that, and that creates that foundation or almost cornerstone, those corner pieces. And then the edge pieces, think about those as what you want or need, not just in your career, but also in the other areas of your life too, because the rest of your life is impacted by your career. For example, if you make $50,000 a year, but you want to live a lifestyle in every other area of your life that is more on $150,000 a year budget, that's not going to add up, right? It's impacted. There's no way that we can argue that. So looking at them separately isn't useful. Looking at them holistically and breaking it down into different categories and say, what do I need most and want most in my areas of financial goals? Or what do I need most and want in areas of relationships and the types of people that I'm spending time around? And what do I need most in those areas of like environment, not just physical environment, like where in the world do I live? I don't want to be in Tallahassee, Florida, but maybe I love Moses Lake, Washington or something crazy like that. Then there's that element, the geography side, but also things like culture. Like, what culture do I want to be surrounded from at a work basis? Or really simple things like, I know that if I don't spend a certain amount of time around sunlight, I get grumpy, and that's not cool for my wife and me and my family and everything else. So I've got to have that. So we look at those edge pieces as those things that you want and need most, those areas that are the highest priorities for you. And when we begin to put those together, that creates the frame. And that starts to outline what the destination is. Just like, okay, we'll use someplace else that's not Tallahassee, Florida. I can't even say it anymore. That's how bad it is, right? But that starts to outline the destination. And once we can outline the destination, we call that an ideal career profile. But really, that allows you to begin putting those pieces in the center to really identify, how do I get there? What specifically does that look like? What types of organizations are those? Or what types of occupations are those? What types of roles are those? And then you can actually do something with it. Does that make any kind of sense?
It does. And I'm sure myself and the listeners have several questions. So I'm going to try to ask these in some semblance of an order here. But since, most of us operate in recency, I'll ask that. So, ideal career profile, what happens when you, and my other question was going to be, is it equally important, or are they equal, to know what you want as what you don't want? Can you still derive that picture to this ideal career profile from that? And what happens when you have an ideal career profile that describes a career that doesn't exist? Is that then small business, start a business, incorporate? I asked that, so this is my, I guess, third part of this.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people come to me, probably not as much as you, obviously, in the career coaching, but Rich and I are very big in mentoring and networking. And frankly, what they're describing is they want to leave work.
Yes.
I mean, they could talk about all these other lofty things, but they're essentially saying, I want to leave. Sometimes they are blunt and say, I want to leave work. And my main question is, because I'm an auditor by day, so I need to see, I'm working on softening my skills over the years. It's a great career field for me for how I operate, but I need to soften, awesome, into my communication, is, and what else would you do? Because you're going to have bills. So if you quit today and then the bill collector comes on the first, then what's your solution there? So kind of, I guess my main question there is, if they describe an ideal career profile that either doesn't exist or they don't know, then what's the pathway?
So I heard, other than the last question, I heard, I think, three other questions in there. Let's see if I can answer them all here as I go along. The short answer is, it looks different for everybody. And this is part of the reason why it's so challenging as well. And when you look out there and see things on, like, how do I figure out like what I want to be doing, or whatever, whatever you might Google, there's not a one-size-fits-all checklist that works for every human being. And instead, since we get really nerdy about this, we realize that there's multiple categories based on what people need and their personality types and things like that, that they have a tendency to fit into. But the short answer is, it is truly different for everybody. And the thing that I've arrived at, and the conclusion that I've arrived at, is that even if you go to the trouble of identifying what you want, and it's something that either doesn't exist or you don't know where it exists, that is so much better. It gives you so much more power in the situation to be able to influence your future compared to not knowing. Because if you know what you want, you can actually do something about it. And honestly, that's part of where like our company came from, our entire organization and how we do business and the way that we do business and with the types of people that we get to interact with every single day, those are a product of, initially it was me, now it's my entire team, of deciding that, hey, this is part of what creates my ideal career. And it wasn't in existence in the way that I wanted it to be, which meant that I had to create it. However, we've realized that for most people, that's not the case. Most people, it's actually out there, but they don't know it's out there. So here's how we handle that. When we're working with somebody, and let's say that we've done all of this upfront work, you know, and to just give you an example, this is fairly thought intensive work a lot of the time. So it might take somebody multiple weeks, sometimes even months, to be able to work through and clarify what they really want and need most, and everything else that goes along with it. But after they've done that, and they get to the conclusion like, oh my goodness, I have no idea where I'd find this, then we have a way to help with that too. So this is where designing experiments becomes really, really useful to us. We recognize that you can go through and you can do all of this great work and build out an ideal career profile, or what we call an ideal career profile, that is ultimately, at the end of the day, it's an educated guess. It's a hypothesis. So what we don't want to happen is you to go and act on the destination and get to Tallahassee, Florida, and realize, oh crap, Tallahassee, Florida sucks. I so apologize to all the people in Tallahassee.
Yeah, we're going to get probably at least, we're probably going to get at least 3 1-star reviews as a result, but we'll live.
I'm from Tallahassee.
I'm actually more afraid of Florida man showing up at my door than anything else, but we will continue to slander them with no discretion.
I have nothing against the good folks of Tallahassee, Florida. I just randomly picked a place. However, in this case, you know, if you get there and you realize that this is not where I actually want to be, that's no good for anybody. It's no good for your maybe new employer. It's no good for you. And instead, the way that we do that is we go through a process to validate that we're actually heading the right direction before we do all this time and effort and work and everything else that goes along with it.
Can I ask a quick follow-up here? Because do you ever come to the answer may be no. Do you ever come to the conclusion where I think especially generationally, but maybe just generally, most people don't want to feel like they're settling. But do you ever come back to the conclusion of, well, maybe your job is satisfying 60, I'll err on the side of heavier. So 60 to 70% of what you want. And then ultimately people come to the realization of realizing what they are getting from that job. Like you said, you mentioned income, you mentioned pay, you mentioned work-life balance. I think a lot of time people start to, I wouldn't say take for granted, but that can be overlooked when you're focusing on all the things that are making you miserable at the job. Does that ever happen? Does anyone ever walk away with the aha moment of maybe their current job isn't that bad?
Yeah, we've had that happen in a variety of different ways. So we had one situation, a guy by the name of Jason. And Jason was an IT director. And, you know, he had a team of great people, really enjoyed a lot of the elements of his job. But honestly, it just wasn't that, in a lot of ways, he was missing a few things out of it. So we started to identify what was actually missing and realized that he was not getting to develop people and mentor people in the way that he wanted to. And, you know, without going into all those really specific ways, we identified that, okay, he has a lot of the things, but these pieces are what is missing. So where's he going to get that? And at that point in time, we said, okay, well, we need to do one thing first. We've done this more than enough to know that this is an educated guess. So how are we going to experiment with that? And that gets into those experiments that I was mentioning. And the way that we did that in this particular case was, we helped him have several conversations with his boss to propose a project that the company needed and would benefit from, but he wouldn't necessarily get paid any more. And at first was going to be a little bit more work for him, but it would expose him to some of these areas to find out, is this really actually what I am missing? Or is it really something that is, you know, different? And is this also really what I want to need? And so he did this and realized, oh my goodness, this is the thing. These are the things that are you know, great for me right now in my life. And on top of that, we then realized that everything else that he wanted for that point in time was also there. So we helped him have another series of conversations with his boss, and they ended up creating a position and moving him to a completely different department that allowed him to continue doing that, except in a full-time role. So that's just one example out of many. And I would say this is, I haven't like run numbers on this. So this is me just making a big wild guess. So don't hold me to this, but I'd say out of the folks that we have the pleasure of helping, that's probably between 5 and 10% of people that end up staying in the same place, but they've made some change. Other times it's been like, maybe they have not ever understood how to draw boundaries at work and realize they actually have all the things that they want, but they've never trained their boss and their team to interact with them in a way that actually allows them to be respected in the way that they need, or to have some of the recognition that they need, or to have some of the time and space that they need. And that's certainly been the case in, I don't know, I can probably think of 5 or 6 situations off the top of my head, but it's definitely a smaller percentage overall for the folks that we've gotten to interact with.
And so this idea of career experiments, and it was something I was going to ask you about, and without having heard you talk about it, I first thought of just taking on different jobs and kind of risking it all, which it sounds like that's not what you mean by career experiments. So can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, almost all of us have this idea in our head that if we're going to make a career transition, that is risky. And instead, that can be risky in some different ways, but we've realized that there are ways to do it that don't really take a lot of risk, and in many cases, make it virtually no risk. And then on top of that, we have realized that what's far riskier is staying in the exact same place. When you know something is off, something is missing, something is whatever, that automatically leads you to settle. And anytime we are automatically moving down the road of settling, that causes a higher percentage of chance to have regret. And I have zero interest in the good people of the world that are listening to this having regret in their lives. That doesn't help anybody either. So to answer your question much more directly, when I say designing an experiment, we're talking about what are the smallest ways that we can validate that you are in fact heading the right direction before you take all of the time and effort to be able to make that move. That way, when you get there, you don't have the Tallahassee, Florida effect. Mm. I'm not going to be able to get away from this, apparently. So totally understand there's no magic pill that you can take that's going to give you the ultimate reassurance that when you spend all the effort and that, at the end of that, you're going to see nothing but rainbows and unicorns on the other end of all that hard work. But we can get a whole bunch of the road signs indicating that we are in fact heading that right direction. So we've designed a variety of different ways to be able to do that. But let me give you a couple examples here. So one of them we call the social Goldilocks. And this is possibly the simplest way to go. And I'll give an example for how this works. We're working with a woman by the name of Laura, and she had worked in sustainability for, it's probably like 8 or 9 years or so in the same company. She'd moved up the ranks, gotten 4 promotions. She now had this team of all these really excited, talented people, and they're all really passionate about their job. The only problem, she wasn't very passionate about her job. And, she'd recently had a kid. It was now 18 months and realized that she didn't want to continue going in here, and she wasn't getting the growth that she wanted. So came to us, started working with her, identified some of these areas that she needed and wanted. And she actually identified 4 different types of roles and organizations that she suspected could line up with her ideal career profile. So one of those was working in innovation. Another one was working in product management. And she had a couple others too, right? So what she ended up doing is what we call the social Goldilocks. And you can think about, if you're familiar with, the porridge and the 3 bears and everything else along those lines, and quickly learning that one's too hot, one's too cold, this one's just right, is the same kind of concept, except what Laura did is she connected with and had conversations, short conversations with several different types of people. Those people that were in the jobs and roles that she hypothesized that she might really enjoy, or people who were in the companies and organizations that she thought would most likely align with her values and all those things that we'd identified that she wanted. And this act of talking to all of the people in all the right places that she suspected that would line up caused her to have over 20 different conversations. And every single conversation that she came out of it with, and we're not talking about informational interviews here, instead a much more informal type conversation here, she would call them up and say, "Hey, you know, I'm going to make a career change. I, you know, saw your role. I was actually really interested in potentially moving into innovation. I would love to ask you some questions about what that's actually like and what's great, you know, what you love, what you don't like about it." And she would go and she'd have the conversation, have all the learnings. And at that point, she could be able to say, "Hey, this clearly is not right for me." Or, "Hey, I love elements about this. How can I dive in further?" So, you know, long story really short, she ended up having all these conversations and identified that she would love to be working with assessment companies. And so she ended up actually a couple of months later talking to multiple people in multiple assessment companies and ended up accepting a role that paid her more, was nearly perfectly in line with all those things that we'd identified that mattered the most to her and was giving her the right growth in all of those different areas. But it wouldn't have happened without that experimentation in between of all of those different conversations, and for her to come out of each one saying, "Yeah, these are great things. Now I know more. And these are not great things. I'm not going to deepen my interest in this particular area."
Got it.
So that's one example out of many.
Yeah. And that's super helpful to hear. And I really hope folks got a lot out of this in terms of how they can think about the smaller steps and less daunting steps. And then one other thing I wanted to mention is I found that a lot of people at the point that they think about finding a new job, they already hate their current job. And I found that to be the worst place to operate from, because you're more likely to take the first thing that comes your way. So can you talk a little bit about if that's been the experience with people that you've worked with?
Yeah, and it gets worse and worse, especially as you start identifying that there could be something else out there that you didn't even know existed that is really great for you. Then that pain gets even worse because you're like, "Oh, I'm wasting my time here. Like, how do I make the move?" And all those things. So we actually find that, and it kind of sounds silly until you're actually in the midst of it, that a good portion of our role for the career coaches on our team is helping people initially be really, really clear about what we call their minimums and ideals. And when I say minimums, I'm talking about clearly identifying what's the line for what they're going to accept in each of those areas that we had mentioned earlier. You know, it might be line in terms of finances, like it pays or has this amount of type of benefits, or has these types of people working with it. That way, when you get to that emotional situation where you've spent all of this time working on making a transition, and on top of that, the pain has increased for your current role, current job that you already don't like all that much for one reason or another. And when you're at that point, it's much easier to say yes to something that is not right. So if you've made that decision in advance in a clear head state, then it's easier to be able to say, "Does this line up with it?" "No, it doesn't." "Oh, crap. Okay. Well, I guess I either have to say no to it," or what we've had happen a lot of times is now you know where it is that you want to go. So we've had many situations where people have been able to go back and we've coached them through having conversations about how to handle turning down an offer, but also explaining to them specifically what the differences are and saying, "Really, what I'm looking for is this. I'm looking for something that has a lot more flexibility than what you're offering. Really, I was looking for something that pays $24,000 more than what you're offering." And a lot of the times we've had people that they come back and say, "You know what? Actually, there's this other person we'd like to introduce you to in the company. Nice. I want you to meet the VP of innovation." And then that leads to another offer that really, truly is right. So that's a perfect example of what we were talking about earlier about saying no to something, having the courage to be able to say no, that is like really, really hard, ends up making the space for something even better to happen. And that's part of this whole recipe, I guess you could call it, for not settling.
Love that. And Scott, it's been awesome having you on the podcast. I think this is a great place to end. So tell the people where they can find you around the web and anything special that you might have coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity. And you know, if you're listening to this, it's on a podcast. So that means you probably enjoy podcasts. That's one of the best ways to connect with us is search Happen to Your Career. That's one of the podcasts that we have, and that'll pop up on, you know, iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to podcasts. We also have our home base at happentoyourcareer.com, and you can find everything that we do over there. But if you've found that, you know, some of the questions that we were talking about, like, hey, I'm not 100% sure what I want, a great way to get started on that is go over to figureitout.co. That's figureitout.co. And that'll allow you to drop in your email and get and connect with us there. But we'll guide you through a 8-day mini course where we ask you to take an action every day that helps you create some of the most important pieces of that ideal career profile that we were actually talking about. And that's completely free. We've had, I think, about 30,000 people through that at this point. And that's a great way to begin identifying what is most important and what you need in your life and your career. So figureitout.co is another way to connect with us.
Awesome. So again, Scott, it's been great having you on the podcast. And we may have to get you back on down the road because there's so much more that we could have talked about. But yeah, again, really appreciate it.
I really appreciate it too. Thank you for the opportunity. This has been fun.
Indeed. Man, Scott is such a happy lad. So we hope you found this conversation with him as useful as we did. And I love his idea of designing career experiments that aren't super risky. And more importantly, the idea that staying in your current gig, if you hate it or aren't growing in that role, is even more risky. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I thought it was very insightful. Definitely gave me a lot of aha moments and pause for reflection, pause for the cause. So I hope the audience felt the same way and found some actionable tips that they can put into place.
Definitely, man. And if you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to share with your network and hit us with those 5 stars in Apple Podcasts and say a few words about the show. So we've seen an uptick over the past couple of weeks and really appreciate folks taking the time to show us some love. Today's review of the week comes from Yonail47. Y-O-N-A-I-L-47. Pretty hard for me to butcher that, but I probably did.
I'm glad that you went because I thought it said Yanni, but I now realize once you spelled it out, I just need to get my eyes checked.
That's what I thought too. I thought it said Yanali, and then I was like, wait, that's not what it says at all.
But I guess that's enough butchering for this week. Listen to this podcast, 5 stars. I recently...
Yeah, my bad. I thought that I spelled it wrong, but I realized I spelled it right, so that O wasn't needed at all. Carry on, good brother.
Listen to this podcast. I recently started listening to podcasts and have been looking for one that I could relate to. And behold, I found one. I've listened to a lot of past and current episodes and I've enjoyed every one of them. Great advice! Exclamation mark. Relatable experiences. These guys make me laugh. I don't find myself getting annoyed listening to their voices. Mm-hmm. And they keep it 100. Glad I found this podcast. Thank you guys for keeping it real. Can't wait for more episodes. And you got them. Thank you, Yonail or Yanni.
Appreciate those 5 stars for sure.
And don't forget to support Paychecks and Balances with a vote to help us win $50,000 in the FedEx Small Business Grant Contest. Thank you to everyone who has already voted, retweeted, or shared on the social medias. You actually have 3 easy ways to vote, and you can do so today by clicking Share This Business on social media, posting the badge, and all of the ways to support us are available at paybal.co/FedEx. That is case sensitive, so just like the company, FedEx, F-E-D-E-X. Thank you for the support.
Definitely, man. So encourage folks to get out and do that. And you can vote once per day. So vote today, vote tomorrow, vote the day after that, vote the day after that. And yeah, help us get this money so we can do more things with the show.
It's shmoney season. And to Rich's point, you can vote each day, but we will only be harassing you for 1 more week. If you're wondering how long we're going to plug you over the head with this, you got 1 more week to go. It ends April 1st, and then we'll learn if we made the finalist list. So appreciate all the support.
And I'm glad you said that because I was going to say what day it ended, then realized I didn't know what day it ended. So I'm glad we're aligned. Chemistry.
Yes, sir. Just in time for Financial Literacy Month. And speaking of, if you want to follow us on the socials, we're available on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. Follow our individual accounts. I'm available at the Marcus Garrett with 1 T on Twitter, 2 T's everywhere else on Earth, which is my government name. And Rich is available all over the internet at I Am Rich Jones.
I am, which is also my government.
And as we mentioned up top, don't forget to join our email list by visiting paybal.co/email. You'll be the first to receive our new debt-free course, weekly newsletter covering interesting reads, actionable tips, and much more.
So we want to thank everybody for listening. And until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.